I'm not a great fool, so I can clearly not choose the wine in front of you. But you must have known I was not a great fool, so I can clearly not choose the wine in front of me.
Truly, you have a dizzying intellect.
Wait till I get going. Let's drink. Me from my glass, and you from yours.
It's The Wine Crush, a show that's all about wine and the lifestyle it creates. And now, here are your hosts for The Wine Crush, Laura Lawson.
Remember, you're fighting for this woman's honor, which is probably more than she ever did.
And Michael Ambrose.
Thank you, Mr. Know-It-All.
Welcome to The Wine Crush. You have Laura Lawson.
And Michael Ambrose.
And we are here to be everything there is about wine. Give us a call at 1-877-4-CRUSH-1. And for those of you who hate the keypad like I do, that is 1-877-427-8741. Today, Michael and I have decided to literally blow our tops. We want to have a conversation about our wine bottles and how they are closed. So the grape debate for today is cork versus screw cap. Which is better? Michael, I have a great idea on which side of the debate you want to stand, but please, by all means, why don't you fire the first volley?
Okay. I think we should not only talk about screw caps and corks, but there are some other closures and other types of containers that we might want to sneak in there as well.
Typical man. You give him two options, he's going to add a fourth and a fifth just so he has an escape route.
Absolutely. No doubt about that. I'm going to take screw tops.
All right.
I surprised you there, didn't I?
Well, you've had a screw loose for ages, so it wouldn't make any perfect sense you to take the screw caps.
Okay. In my part of the business, one of the things that always occurs when we would have a wine dinner at the club, we would have usually about 50 people come to the dinners, and within those 50 people, we knew that by the end of the night, each person would drink about a bottle of wine. So we were going to be opening about 4 cases of wine for those 50 people. Inevitably, when we were using natural corks, I would lose 1 or 2 bottles because there's a bacteria that is called TCA, trichloroanisole, and we don't have to get into that. But that smell gets into the wine, and it makes the wine bad. And almost every case, there would be 1 or 2 bottles that would be bad out of those 50 or 48 bottles.
Well, explain that smell, Michael, for our listening audience. When they actually look at a bottle of wine, there's different ways to look at bad bottles.
Yeah.
You can look at wine that has bad acid. You can look at wine that has high alcohol. But specifically, Michael is talking about the term corked.
Corked, that's right. And corked, if you're not familiar with it and you open a bottle that's got a natural cork in it and it smells like wet cardboard, as some people describe it, that's what corked is. Sometimes it can be sulfur that gives it that smell, but for the most part, it's TCA, trichloroanisole, corked.
Well, Michael, are you saying that the only reason and the only way a wine can be corked is if it has a cork closure?
Yeah, I am.
Right.
Yeah. Some people feel that in the sterilization of the corks, that sometimes a little bit of the cleaning solvent is left in the cork.
How would a man know anything about cleaning?
That's true.
Yep.
That's very true. And I can tell you, you know, there were several synthetic corks that were being made originally that gave off kind of a stinky odor as well. But the screw tops these days, they're not your mother's screw tops. They're on good quality wines, and it could be argued that maybe they don't age as well. And
I had you down for a wine connoisseur. I didn't know that you drank Mad Dog and Boone's Farm and all of our fine screw cap wines.
Only when there's nothing left in the refrigerator except for those do I fall back on those. But I can tell you, you know, some great companies out of Australia are making good wines. Torbrecht comes to mind, and their little woodcutter Shiraz, if you're looking for a big, strong wine for a good, cheap price, it's got a screw cap, and it's easy to unscrew, take a big old swallow out of it, screw it back on, and stick it back in the refrigerator.
When you look at the difference between cork closure and you look at screw cap closures, world of difference between the two. With screw caps, they're solid, they generally don't leak, they don't allow air in, they preserve the wine exactly as it's bottled, which I think is lovely. And in most cases, Michael and I will not agree on things, but I think if you're going to look at a wine that you're going to drink in the first 12 months after production or the first 24 months, then absolutely screw cap's the answer. But I don't think it's a long-term answer for all wines out there. Right. Michael, you, of course, are always across the pond. You're looking at Bordeaux and you're looking at Burgundy. And there's still a whole lot of science behind this, but if you even look at the romanticism of wine, I'm sorry, to go to a restaurant, to sit down and dine, to have the sommelier come over to the table, to offer me my Pellini Montrachet or to offer me my Grand Echezo and to flip the top off it? No, I don't think so. There's something about presentation that will definitely be lacking in those wines.
Yeah.
But past that, I think for a wine to mature, for it to grow, that a little bit of air has to be allowed to get in the bottle so that slowly your tannins weaken, slowly your color focuses, slowly that the yeast, everything falls out. I think adding a little bit of air mellows the wine and certainly smooths out the rougher points on it. We encourage those of you on both sides of the debate to call in. Obviously, we'd love to hear from people in restaurants. We know how you feel about screw taps behind the bar. We know you like being able to open them. But how do those of you on the floor of restaurants feel about presenting them? Give us a call, 1-877-4-CRUSH-1. That is 1-877-427-8741. Give us your opinions. Come blow your top with us.
Let me show you how this is done. Hold the glass up and examine the wine against the light. You're looking for color and clarity. Now, stick your nose in it. Maybe some strawberry. Oh, there's just a flutter of like a nutty Edam cheese.
When do we drink it now?
Are you chewing gum?
No.
Spit it out.
Michael and I are going to head over to the wine line, where our guest today is Miss Laura DePasquale, one of the most revered women in the wine business. Laura is a master sommelier, which is just an amazing, amazing dedicated feat. She is also the national sales director for fine wines for Palm Bay Imports. Laura, welcome to the Wine Crush.
Thanks, Laura. Great to be here.
Do me a favor and tell us what a sommelier is, why it's so hard to pronounce, and what it really means.
It's hard to pronounce because it's French.
Oh, la, la.
I like you already.
But what it really is, I think my favorite definition is actually the French translation, or it's an old French translation, and it literally means the beast of burden. But what it really is, basically, is someone who serves and sells wine. They're dedicated usually in a restaurant setting, but it's someone who's really dedicated themselves to not just the food and wine pairing or the selecting of the wine, but also the service of the wine in terms of making sure temperatures are correct, glassware is correct. And it's someone who's in the restaurant that's there to help you and to guide you, not to inflict their taste on you. And someone who you should, as a consumer and as a guest in a restaurant, seek out, make friends with, and use as a guide to try new and fun things.
That is really cool. I've always found myself to want to be a beast of burden. And
a beast of burden, Michael, no problems. I think, Laura, when you're looking at the concept of sommelier and you think about going to a restaurant, I just have this vision of that old Vincent Price movie from the 40s where they go in and the guy is steadfast. He's in a suit. He's in the tie, has the glasses. And you really think at some point he's going to hit you over the head with a bottle of wine if you mispronounce something. A lot of restaurants today are getting back in the format of hiring sommeliers. What is your advice to our listeners about approaching a sommelier? Keep in mind, most of us are scared to death of these people.
Yeah, you know, it's a shame that that's the vision of a lot of sommeliers. I think today we're seeing a lot more diversity in the sommelier community, more women in the business, for sure, and definitely a younger and fresher approach, which is important. But if you were going to a restaurant and you were looking at a wine list and, you know, this big, heavy book was coming over to you, or even just a short list with a lot of things on there that you didn't understand or didn't know, you know, the way I would base it is I would talk to the sommelier and I would talk about flavors that I like. You know, I like white wines that are really appley and crisp, and I don't like a lot of wood. Or I like red wines that maybe don't have such big, aggressive tannins. I like something that's a little bit fruitier and maybe even a little sweeter. And I would definitely express the type of flavor profiles, maybe even choosing a brand or two. You know, I like to drink Mondavi Cabernet, or I like to drink Pinot Noirs from Oregon.
Right.
And I would also, and I think this is very important to a sommelier, is to let them know perhaps what you're thinking of eating at your table, what would pair well with that, as well as giving them an appropriate price range, what you're looking to spend that evening.
Yeah, and that was going to be my biggest question. I think a lot of people have the fear that they're going in thinking that they want to spend $30 or $40 on a bottle of wine, And if they've got guests, is there an appropriate way that they can indicate to that sommelier, this is kind of the price range I'm looking for?
Absolutely. I mean, really and truly, every sommelier should ask what your price range is. And fact of the matter is when, you know, I haven't worked in restaurants in a while, but when I was working on the floor as a sommelier, and I always trained sommeliers now this way, is it's very easy to sell the $300 bottle of wines that everybody's heard of, Chateau Margaux or Opus 1 or something really crazy. But for sommeliers, we're more excited by the fun kind of unknown discovery wines that are maybe $30, maybe $40 a bottle that people don't know. Those are the things that really turn good sommeliers on.
Yeah.
So it's totally appropriate to say, listen, this is just an after-dinner kind of, or an after-work kind of dinner, and, you know, we're not looking to spend a fortune here. We're only looking to spend $30 or $40 on a bottle, and that's completely appropriate, and the sommelier will also appreciate that. If, on the other hand, it is a special occasion and you are looking to impress, then go ahead and say that, you know, and definitely give a price range. You know, we don't want to go above $75 or $100 as our top if it's a special occasion.
Laura, I want to add to this simply because I am trying desperately to follow in your footsteps and know what you have accomplished. For our listeners, once again, this is Laura DePasquale. She is a master sommelier. She is also the national sales director for fine wines for Palm Bay Imports.
Yep.
And out of 118, you are one of 13 females. Congratulations on that. They say that women have finer palates. They say we have better senses of smell. As California and the rest of the world are proving, some of the best winemakers invariably are female. Why are there so few women in the wine business?
Traditionally, this has definitely been a men's world. The hours are long and tough on women, especially if, you know, you're trying to balance a family. You know, to be a sommelier in a restaurant that requires a sommelier or has the needs of a sommelier, you're talking about working nights, working a lot of holidays, working weekends, and that could be very difficult on relationships and on raising families. And, you know, just like any industry, it takes a while for the women to catch up. You're absolutely right. Women do tend to have better palates, tend to have a better sense of smell, but it's traditionally a business that hasn't really welcomed females, including on, you know, the position that I'm in now is not really rife with a lot of women as well. But it's changing. It's definitely changing. And certainly at the Court of Master Sommeliers, we're really promoting as many women as we can and encouraging as many women to be involved as we can.
Hey, Laura, if you'll stay with us in the show, we are going to come back to you within the hour. Why don't you kick back, grab a glass of wine, hang out a little bit, and we'll get back to you in a while.
Okay.
Looking for some good news at the gas pump? Chevy has seven models that offer an EPA estimated 30 miles per gallon highway or better. From HHR with an EPA estimated 30 mpg highway, to the Avail 5 with an EPA estimated 34 mpg highway, and Cobalt XFE with an EPA estimated 36 miles per gallon highway. Chevy's MVPs of MPG, based on EPA segmentation. See your local Chevy dealer.
So you think you're a Team 48 fan, right?
Try me.
How many Sprint Cup races have Jimmy?
229.
How many did
34
they?
34 wins.
Where was Jimmy?
El Cajon, California.
When was he?
9/17/75.
Where was Chad?
Rockport, Illinois.
I'm sorry, what?
Rockport, Illinois.
Rockport, Illinois? No, my friend. Chad Knaus was born in Rockford, Illinois. You call yourself a fan.
Become an official member of the Team Lowe's Racing Fan Club. Just log in at www.lowesracing.com and sign up today.
This is Jimmy Johnson, and I want to thank all of the Lowe's Team 48 fans for cheering us on over the years.
Lowe's, let's build something together.
There's a reason Roush Performance chooses Cooper Tires for their high-performance vehicles. Just ask Cooper Tires technical advisor, Johnny Unser.
Roush tunes vehicles to reach their absolute limits. They need tires that can handle those limits, from handling to durability to safety. That's why they choose Cooper. And that same race-bred technology goes into every Cooper tire you buy, no matter what you drive.
For more information and to find a dealer near you, visit CooperTire.com. Cooper Tires. Don't give up a thing.
Hey, Doug, are you okay?
Mark, I'm practicing my ninja moves so I can take on weeds with Spectracide Weed and Grass Killer.
Do you mean there are ninjas inside the Spectracide bottle?
Well, using Spectracide is like sending an army of tiny green ninjas to kill weeds and unwanted grass right down to the root. You see the result in as fast as 3 hours.
I see, Sensei. I'm heading over to Lowe's to pick up Spectracide Weed and Grass Killer with ninja fighting power.
Just remember, Mark, weeds can't hide from Spectracide. Extra side.
Bring the ball up. See the court, baby. See the court.
Let's go.
All right, see the open man. Go pass. That's Listen carefully.
Yeah! Okay, get back.
What do you hear?
Good beat.
Yes!
Do you know what that is?
No, that's right. Okay.
That's the sound of someone being there. The sound of someone caring about a kid.
Bus shot! Yes!
That's the sound of a mentor. See a movie together, play catch, or just hang out. The important thing is spending time together. A little of your time means a lot to a kid.
This is Laura Bush. Help America's youth. Be a friend. Be a mentor. Just be there.
To be a mentor, go to BigBrothersBigSisters.org. That's BigBrothersBigSisters.org. A public service message brought to you by Big Brothers Big Sisters and the Ad Council.
Look for the bare necessities, the simple bare necessities.
Have a banana.
Eating well.
Have two bananas.
And playing.
Come on, Baloo.
Go together like best friends.
You better believe it.
With the food pyramid, the bare necessities of living healthy are easy.
That bring the bare necessities of life.
It gives you just the right amount of grains, vegetables, fruits, milk, and meats and beans.
Crazy.
So eat right.
You eat it?
You're gonna love the way they tickle.
Be active.
I'll move. That's it.
And don't forget to have fun.
You're lots of fun, Baloo.
That's the way to be the best.
You're all right, kid.
At anything you do.
Yeah, man.
You can go to mypyramid.gov to play some games and find out more.
Me and Baloo, we've got things to do.
This has been a message from the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Ad Council.
If you'd like to get your questions about wine and food answered on the air, call us at 1-877-4-CRUSH-1. 1-877-4-CRUSH-1. If you're more into numbers than words, 1-877-427-8741.
I believe we have Tony, and he wants to talk turkey. Tony, welcome to the Wine Crush. You have Laura and Michael here. What can we do for you today?
Well, thanks so much for taking my call. Yeah, you know, I know I drink my reds with my meats and typically whites with a seafood, but with turkey, I'm not quite sure if you go white wine, red wine. What's the rule on that?
How well do you cook your turkey?
I mean, not overly done, but, you know, keep it nice and juicy.
See, in my house, it always winds up dry as a bone, so we wind up serving scotch with it. So that's why I ask.
Tony, at my house, we usually have a sage dressing, and I would personally go with Pinot Noir. I think it's a great wine to serve with turkey, particularly when you're having all the other flavors that go in there, you know, the roasted pecans on the sweet potatoes, and as I said, the sage or the oyster dressings. Those flavors just go really well with Pinot Noir.
That sounds great. And my other question was, I've gone several places where they've taken red wine out of the bottle and actually put it into a glass decanter. I'm not even sure if that's what it's called. What's the purpose of that? Is that something I should be doing at home as well?
That's directly proportional. People decant wines generally for three reasons. One is to get the bottle to open up. I think those who are even mentally associated with wine know that, you know, you see people rolling the wine around the glass. You hear about wine breathing. That's simply to get air to the wine, and that's why you decant wines. Your really young, big, powerful reds, essentially those California Cabernets you paid more than $60 for, mm-hmm. Go ahead and decant it. The other reason people decant wine is they're really old bottles. And what happens with older bottles of red wine is slowly but surely the yeast, the color, slowly drain out of the bottle. And what happens is they settle in the bottom or the side of the bottle. And it's kind of like, I don't know how you are in the morning. Sometimes I'm in a hurry. I'm making my coffee. I wind up with coffee grounds in it. I drink. I have coffee grounds in my teeth. It's really annoying and ruins my day. Same concept with decanting for older wines. You don't want to get a big mouthful full of sediment and be grinning black teeth at everybody for the next 3 days. If you decant a bottle of wine, hopefully you're leaving all the sediment back in the bottle and you just have clean, rich wine in your decanter.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Well, that sounds great.
Listen, Tony, a word of warning. I totally agree with everything that Laura said. The young wines need decanting as much or more than the older wines. But when you're decanting to separate the sediment from the wine itself, you need to be drinking that wine almost immediately because old wines are pretty fragile. If you're drinking a 20-year-old wine and you decant it and let it wait for 2 hours, it's going to lose its flavor. It's going to lose the nose, the smell of it, and you're going to lose some of the enjoyment of it.
Great. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, Tony. You so much for calling the Wine Crush.
Call Michael and Laura now at 1-877-4-CRUSH-1.
Welcome to the Wine Crush. You have Laura and Michael talking to you. How are you this afternoon?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Hey, good. What's your question for us today?
Well, you know, often I go to a restaurant and I get a little confused when I go to the other reds and I see Shiraz and Syrah. Could you please explain what the difference is?
Yeah, it's the country from which it comes. A Syrah is it's got its main home back in Europe. A Shiraz is the way they mispronounce Syrah in Australia. Same grape, but it does. But I've got to admit, it tastes a little bit different. I think California Syrah and Australian Shiraz taste pretty much they have the same flavor components. The European Syrahs are kind of dirtier, more like tarry. They've got more earthy flavors.
Jim, that
doesn't sound very appetizing, tarry. Is that a normal term for Shiraz?
It's Michael talking. Nothing's normal when you get him involved. When you're looking, it's always confusing when you look in that other red category. You have Syrah, you have Shiraz, you have Petite Syrah. And I think a lot of people get intimidated by it. When you look at it and you see Syrah, S-Y-R-A-H, those tend to be the fruit-forward wines. They're soft, they're lush, they're sexy. They are the wines that tend to go with everything. When you see Shiraz, get ready to get a chair and a whip out. These are going to be very large wines. They're powerful. They're peppery. They are something we call tannic, which means they have a lot of power, not necessarily bitterness to them, but a lot of that pucker factor that sometimes people say.
High alcohol also.
Yes, they tend to have very high alcohol, which means if you aren't enjoying your evening, please order a bottle of Shiraz. Feel free to drink it, and things do always get better. What else can we answer for you? Does that make sense on Syrah and Shiraz?
It does. You made that very clear. Thank you so much for that information.
Jim, thank you very much for calling into the Wine Crush, and please know we are always here for your wine answers. As we head to break, we want to give you our Wine Crush website where you can email us questions and comments, as well as find out how you can call in and get your question answered on the air. We've even got recipes that you can make at home. Our website is winecrush.com. We certainly would love to hear from you. Back with more Wine Crush right after this.
So, you know, we won the Cup in 06, then we won again in 07. So, naturally, me, Jimmy, Chad, and the guys, we're really happy. And, you know, of course, we've had some...
What's this we? We won in 06. We won in 07. What, are you part of Lowe's Team 48?
Yeah.
Become an official member of the Team Lowe's Racing Fan Club. Just log in at www.lowesracing.com and sign up today. You'll get the club's free track record magazine, members-only discounts, weekly club emails, and lots more.
This is Jimmy Johnson. Looking forward to having you on the team.
Lowe's. Let's build something together.
Z-Max. It helps your car, truck, motorcycle, or boat save gas and last longer. The secret of Z-Max is micro-lubrication. Z-Max penetrates deep into the metal of your engine and drivetrain where regular oil can't. Z-Max reduces heat and friction, dissipates carbon buildup, restores power, and reduces fuel consumption. Z-Max maintains mileage in your new car and improves mileage in your older car. It works. Log on to Z-Max.com to find a Z-Max retail performance partner. Z-Max. Performance you can feel.
For the bare necessities, the simple bare necessities.
Have a banana.
Eating well.
Have two bananas.
And playing.
Come on, Baloo.
Go together like best friends.
You better believe it.
With the food pyramid, the bare necessities of living healthy are easy.
That bring the bare necessities of life.
It gives you just the right amount of grains, vegetables, fruits, milk, and meats and beans.
Crazy.
So eat right.
You eat it?
You're gonna love the way they tickle.
Be active.
I'll move. That's it.
And don't forget to have fun.
You're lots of fun, Baloo.
That's the way to be the best.
You're all right, kid.
At anything you do.
Yeah, man.
You can go to MyPyramid.gov to play some games and find out more.
Me and Baloo, we've got things to do.
This has been a message from the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Ad Council.
Son, I want you home by 10, all right?
I know.
Hold on. Listen, we need to talk about drinking.
Hmm.
You know how I feel about alcohol.
Yeah, I know.
Seriously, you're way too young to drink. I know some kids are drinking, but you're my kid. And just because they drink doesn't mean you have to.
I know.
I mean, you're still growing, you're still developing. You may think you can handle it, but you're not a grown-up yet. It's dangerous.
I know, okay?
Teenagers know everything. So talk about underage drinking before they know it all. Before they're teens.
Listen, when you drink, it screws up your judgment. I don't want you getting hurt. You could make some serious mistakes.
I know, I know.
Listen to me. This is real.
I know, okay? I know.
Start talking before they start drinking. And keep talking. To learn more about the dangers of underage drinking and what to say to your kids, go to StopAlcoholAbuse.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
What would you do if you had to choose between the buffalo and the giraffes? Between a flower or an elephant? What would you choose? What if you had to decide between a 100-year-old tree and a 1,000,000-year-old beech? Between drinking clean water or breathing clean air? Would you make the right choice? Would there be a right choice? Now there's a way to help. Not just one, but all these things. EarthShare, the world's leading environmental groups working together. It's one choice we can all live with.
This ad sponsored by Ad Council and EarthShare.
Welcome to The Wine Crush, your weekly tour of the wonderful world of the grape in all its glory. I'm Laura Lawson.
And I'm Michael Ambrose. Finding the right wine for your taste and your budget doesn't have to be rocket science. Our mission is to strip away some of the mystery and myth and help you enjoy wine to its fullest.
Whether you enjoy a glass of wine with dinner or out on the town, we'll point you at some labels that you might want to try and we'll answer questions that you might have. So let's jump right to it.
Drinking wine.
Call Michael and Laura now at 1-877-4-CRUSH-1. That's 1-877-427-8741.
Mark is calling us with a question on foul and white wine. Michael, with it foul, you want to start this off?
Mark, what's your question?
Hey, Michael, thanks for taking my call. I cooked a Cornish game hen for company, and I had a white wine, so I thought I was doing everything right. But I did a Chardonnay, and did I overpower the Cornish game hen? Because the fowl seemed to be kind of tasteless.
Hmm.
What would you suggest?
Well, how did you cook it, Mark?
Just baked it in the oven and had some stuffing on the side with it, and it just didn't work. And I'm wondering if it kind of overpowered it with the choice of wine I selected.
Well, and you could have. You know, American Chardonnays are big, powerful wines, and sometimes they will make a lightly flavored dish like that taste even more lightly flavored. There is a lot of interest these days in Pinot Grigios and Pinot Gris. That's something that you might want to consider. A similar taste profile, maybe a little bit more earthy flavors, but it's a lighter bodied wine as well, and so that might pair better.
Sometimes when you're looking at dishes like the Cornish game hens, quail, some of the smaller poultry items that are out there, I think people tend to lean more towards delicate sauces and delicate flavors. I mean, we all definitely put heavy stuff on our turkeys like saffron, sage, along those lines. But when you're looking at the game hens, when you're looking at quail, these lend themselves to delicate wines. Now, usually Michael and I are worlds literally apart when it comes to picking wines like this. But I would actually look over the pond. I would look in France. I would look for wines from the Loire Valley. I would look for wines. These are based off of Chenin Blanc. And they have a little bit of acidity, but they have nice fruit to them. And what they can do is actually complement. The game hen will have just enough fatty base to it to bring out the lovely apple, the lovely pear, and the apricot you could get out of the Loire wines.
Right. So look for Vouvray from there.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, great. Yeah, that definitely sounds like I want to soften it up a little bit.
Oh, don't worry. You look at American winemakers, you look at all the oak that we find in California Chardonnays, and sometimes it's hard to tell the difference whether you're eating an apple or chewing on an oak tree. So it's certainly not your fault. Just in the future, when you're looking at doing the game hens, flip over and look on the back of the wines. Especially American wines are good about describing the wines on the back. And if one of the first five words says oak, pick another one.
Right.
Great. Do you have time for another quick question?
Sure.
Yeah, I'm a hunter, and yeah, I get venison. And what would be a better choice on a red? I'm assuming that with venison that I want to do a red wine. What would be a recommendation you might have on that?
I think venison is one of the stronger flavored meats that you can find, and particularly if you're going to do some type of a hunter's marinade with black pepper and vinegar and so forth. One of the things that I would match it with would be a Shiraz or a Syrah. They're big, full flavored, and they would at least stand up to that venison flavor.
I think venison, I've had it so many different ways. I think it can be elegant, but the root of what you're dealing with when you're dealing with deer is going to be a gamey flavor. And I think one of the best things you can ask for to complement that is an American Zinfandel, especially one from Sonoma Valley, especially one from Alexander Valley. I think you get enough pepper. And what's neat about doing a Zinfandel is they tend to be the highest alcohol wines that are made in the States. And the higher the alcohol tends to balance that gamey flavor and sometimes the fatty flavor you get from that meat.
Wow, great.
So you've got two good choices there. American Zins, Australian Shirazes, they'll give you, they'll be strong enough to stand up to that dish that you're going to serve.
And, of course, bourbon's always lovely as well.
Okay, yeah, great. Well, super. Hey, thank you very much.
All right, Mark, good luck with it and happy hunting.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
We have John from North Carolina on the line. John, thank you for calling the Wine Crush.
Absolutely. What's the difference between Burgundy and Pinot Noir?
Oh, good Lord, you're going to let Michael talk for hours.
Yep.
Bless your heart.
Sit back and relax. I'm going to tell you some great stuff. I guess you're talking about red Burgundy and Pinot Noir.
Yes.
Okay. They actually use the same grape, and that's the Pinot Noir grape. In France, Pinot Noir is grown in an area called Burgundy, and wines that come from that area are called Burgundy rather than Pinot Noir for the most part. They are the same grape as Pinot Noir is in the United States. However, there is a difference in flavor, and my generalization would be that the French style is a little more tart. It's got more of an earthy component. You can get more raspberry-type flavors out of the inexpensive ones, and then you get more of a rustic flavor out of the expensive ones. Now, California, you get more of a jammy, fruit-forward flavor, more like a black raspberry or a blackberry. They're typically bigger in alcohol, and they're quite good.
John, what I think you're looking for, and this has been amazing to watch, is people talk about Burgundy, and you hear that in movies, you see it in print, you hear about it in the news. And then, of course, the recent American fascination with Pinot Noir, thanks to our lovely movie Sideways. And what's been interesting is for those people who have always drunk Burgundy, it's fun seeing Americans jump on the bandwagon with Pinot Noir. And I think people are getting a bad experience with Pinot Noir in the last 2 years. I think people are jumping right in and paying $15, $20 a bottle for American Pinot Noir, and they are getting a cotton candy flavor. They are getting some overcrop flavors that are not necessarily indicative of the wine grape. I think for once, Michael and I will agree this head-to-head. The Pinot Noirs, you can walk in your local Mega Mart and see them. There's going to be the label that doesn't say Pinot Noir on it. That's going to be a French Burgundy. It's going to be robust. It's going to be earthy. It's going to have delicate cherry flavors. And I think if you want to look at great producers, I'd look for Louis Jadot. I would look for Louis Latour and take a moment, find one of their low-end wines that just says Bourgogne, it says Mekong, it says something along the very simple lines of that, and try that and compare and contrast that to what you know from California Pinot Noir.
Côte de Nuit, that's C-O-T-E-S-D-U-N-E. U-I-T-E-S, that's a great middle-priced wine to check out as far as French Burgundy is concerned.
John, do you have a favorite Pinot Noir?
I tend to like some from Oregon is some of my favorite areas right now.
Yeah, I think Oregon's making some real quality wines, and I think that's where they're going to show really well as time goes on. Strangely enough, that latitude coincides quite well with the latitude of Burgundy, whereas, of course, the latitude of Napa Valley is much further south and gets a lot more direct sunlight.
I think if the United States is ever going to have a candidate who is going to compare to the great Burgundies, the great Pinots that are being produced out of that region, it's going to be coming from Oregon. Mm-hmm. So see, you're a man ahead of your time already, profounding to like those Oregon Pinot Noirs.
Excellent. Thanks for all your information.
Hey, John, thank you very much for calling in. Feel free to call the Wine Crush anytime you have a question or a problem.
The Wine Crush.
You see, this earth has been resting. Now it's good. Someday I'm going to buy this land, and I'm going to make a great wine. Right here on this wreck of a vineyard.
Hi-ya! And Doug, are you okay?
Mark, I'm practicing my ninja moves so I can take on weeds with Spectracide Weed and Grass Killer.
Do you mean there are ninjas inside the Spectracide bottle?
Well, using Spectracide is like sending an army of tiny green ninjas to kill weeds and unwanted grass right down to the root. You see the result in as fast as 3 hours.
I see, Sensei. I'm heading over to Lowe's to pick up Spectracide Weed and Grass Killer with ninja fighting power.
Just remember, Mark, weeds can't hide from Spectracide.
I'm on a test track riding in a Roush Mustang with Cooper Tires technical advisor Johnny Unser to learn why Roush Performance chooses Cooper Tires.
Wow, feel that grip?
Yeah, I felt it. Cooper incorporates what they learn at the track into engineering high-performing, reliable, safe tires for whatever you drive on the street.
Okay, time to cut her loose.
We weren't already cutting her loose? Cooper Tires, don't give up a thing. For more information and to find a dealer near you, visit CooperTire.com. Okay, seriously, I want out.
Looking for some good news at the gas pump? Chevy has 7 models that offer an EPA estimated 30 miles per gallon highway or better. From HHR with an EPA estimated 30 mpg highway, to the Avail 5 with an EPA estimated 34 mpg highway, and Cobalt XFE with an EPA estimated 36 miles per gallon highway. Chevy's MVPs of mpg, based on EPA segmentation. See your local Chevy dealer.
When a legend like Carroll Shelby puts Z-Max in every car he owns, maybe you should too.
I know it works.
Z-Max with micro-lubrication reduces wear on vital engine parts and increases horsepower. If you're a custom engine builder or a do-it-yourselfer, Z-Max belongs in your car. Z-Max. Easy to use. One in your gas and one in your oil every 5,000 miles. Take it from Carroll Shelby.
I put my name on the line on that, and I mean it.
Log on to ZMAX.com and find a retail performance partner. Z-Max. Performance you can feel.
Melting polar ice was a dirty look. Shrinking glaciers, a nudge. Dying forests, they were a tap on the shoulder. We got a finger in our chest from the rising sea level, and a sharp poke in the ribs from recent wildfires in Alaska. Then dying coral reefs and eroding coastlines pushed us hard. The drowned polar bears, that was a shove. Melting permafrost, that was a slap. Rising ocean temperatures and extreme weather, an uppercut. Then record-breaking heat waves hit us right where it hurts. Has it occurred to anyone that maybe the Earth is trying to get our attention?
We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution before it's too late. To find out how, go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Red, red wine. Go to my head.
If you'd like to get your questions about wine and food answered on the air, call us at 1-877-4-CRUSH-1. That's 1-877-427-8741. We are with Laura DePasquale. She is Master Sommelier, and she is also the Fine Wine Director for Palm Bay Imports. Laura, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Let's explain that Laura works for an import company. And Laura, go over some of the different brands that our listeners may have encountered in their mega marts and in their restaurants for us.
Sure. We're the largest importer of Italian wines in the country, but we represent wines from all over the world. We do represent Cabot, Pinot Grigio, which is one of the hugies.
Right.
Santa Rita from Chile is perhaps something that people know. Bertani Amarone, an iconic wine. Laborioa from Burgundy. Champagne Gosse, which is boutique and artisanal. Rocca della Macchia, I think a lot of people are familiar with. Marchese di Barolo. I could go on and on, but we represent 85 brands, so that's a lot to go over.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Laura, can you sum up what an importer is in 15 words?
Sure. An importer is the legal agency that maintains the sole legal rights to bring a wine into this country. And then it's sold to a wholesaler, and the wholesaler in state by state, and then the wholesaler in turn gets it to the restaurateur or the retailer.
Whether you're in a sommelier situation or not, how do you get people's comfort level up with ordering something that's strange?
I think one thing that sommeliers can do or managers can do who are organizing wine lists is phonetic spelling. I think it's nice to highlight a grape varietal to get them into the vocabulary. I mean, I have a friend that named his daughter Viognier, if that's going to help at all.
Oh, I love it.
Poor thing.
Bless her heart.
But I know. I think that that could definitely help us to do some phonetic spelling. But I think as a customer, too, you know, ask for the pronunciation. Say, you know, I'm not familiar with this grape, and maybe just point to it on the wine list. You know, can you tell me about it and how do you say it? Because a sommelier wasn't born with this knowledge either. At some point, they had to pick up a book and start studying and tasting and listening. And it's just like any other word that is foreign as we become a more global economy and global society, is that there's constantly new words being introduced into our vocabulary. And there's no shame in asking. The worst thing that a customer can do and the worst thing that a sommelier can do is pretend they know it all, because even though I'm considered an expert, I have to admit, I feel like I know very little about the wine industry, and that's what keeps me excited about it.
Laura, let's take a slightly different tact. I want to ask you a couple of questions. Is what's the biggest mistake people make when they actually have a sommelier available in a restaurant? What do you find the biggest mistakes are?
Some of the biggest mistakes people are is that they don't express what they like in a wine. They tend to sort of say, well, I like wines that are really strong.
Yeah.
When what they're meaning is, you know, maybe they like wines that are more a New World style with lots of alcohol and big, bold fruit. Or they
right.
tend to say, I like wines that are sweet. But what they mean is they really like wines that are fruitier. Or they tend to say, I like wines that are really mild, which meaning that they don't like aggressive tannins. And so I think that developing your own kind of vocabulary is a mistake that people make with
right.
sommeliers. And to be intimidated, because you really shouldn't be. You know, the fact of the matter is that this is a hospitality industry, and a sommelier is there to serve. And that is really the most important thing that sommelier can do, is to find the right pair for you and make the guest happy. So to be intimidated is a huge mistake.
Yeah.
What do you think the biggest challenge, as we look ahead, we see the wine business and we see how these lists are becoming. It's been fun looking at wine lists in restaurants in different regions throughout the country. And you see them taking a turn two different directions. You see them going back to the big books of the 70s where you have 40 and 50 pages of wine and it weighs 200 pounds and has to be rolled out in the cart. Or on the flip side of it, you see a wine list that maybe has 40 items on it. And it's all in Spanish, or it's all in French, or it's all in German. What's the next trend? What's the cool thing we need to start looking for?
I think there's a couple of cool new trends that are happening that are really interesting. I think, you know, the days of having 25 really oaky Chardonnays are over, and I think that the alternative white section is kind of going away as well. I see definitely a greater exploration of varietals and a greater exploration of what the varietal can do. So, for example, Riesling is hot and happening. And so you see lists and wine lists saying Riesling, and they're kind of doing an exploration of Riesling around the world. How does Riesling react in traditional areas like Germany, which are just classic and spectacular, but also Australia, or Riesling from Chile, or Riesling from Washington State? So I think that's a fun new thing that's happening.
As a recap, what would you say are the top three ways to effectively use the services of a sommelier?
I think the best ways to use a sommelier services are to find the most delicious pairing for whatever your entree selections are for that evening, or your food choices are for those evenings. That's the first way. I think the second way is to use the resources of that sommelier to find new and fun wines that you haven't tasted before, to explore something different, find a new grape varietal or a new favorite brand. And I think the third thing is that to make a relationship with that sommelier, if you're a collector or you're more interested in collecting wine, to learn more. But also, you know, if you're doing special events or you're you're entertaining for business, to really set it up where you can have a lot of things pre-selected and chosen for you ahead of time to really look like a superstar in front of your bosses or with a client or at a private event that you are organizing.
So the more you know, the more you realize you have to know and that no one can truly be an expert. So please don't be scared when you're out there to ask your restaurant managers, to ask your Mega Mart managers, to ask people for help. That's what we're all here for.
This is the Wine Crush, and we've been talking to Laura DePasquale, one of the few master sommeliers in the world. It's just been great speaking with you, and we look forward to talking with you again sometime in the future.
Thank you, Michael.
Laura, thank you very, very much for taking part of your valuable time to call in and inform our listeners and spend the afternoon with us. Hopefully, we'll have a chance to have you back and raise a glass, and we can do a virtual tasting with you next time.
That'd be awesome, Laura. Thank you.
Yes, America's favorite program will be back. You'll get more laughs, more fun, more thrill.
This is the Wine Crush.
There's a reason Roush Performance chooses Cooper Tires for their high-performance vehicles. Just ask Cooper Tires technical advisor, Johnny Unser.
Roush tunes vehicles to reach their absolute limits. They need tires that can handle those limits, from handling to durability to safety. That's why they choose Cooper. And that same race-bred technology goes into every Cooper tire you buy, no matter what you drive.
For more information and to find a dealer near you, visit CooperTire.com. Cooper Tires. Don't give up a thing.
Hey-ya! Doug, are you okay?
Mark, I'm practicing my ninja moves so I can take on weeds with Spectracide Weed and Grass Killer.
Do you mean there are ninjas inside the Spectracide bottle?
Well, using Spectracide is like sending an army of tiny green ninjas to kill weeds and unwanted grass right down to the root. You see the result in as fast as 3 hours.
I see, Sensei. I'm heading over to Lowe's to pick up Spectracide Weed and Grass Killer with ninja fighting power.
Just remember, Mark, weeds can't hide from Spectracide.
Look, Steve, isn't that Jimmy Johnson over there?
Where?
Over there, in the lumber aisle.
Yeah, that's him.
Well, you said if you ever saw him, you'd ask him.
Oh, I'm not going to ask him.
Go on, ask him.
I can't, it's embarrassing.
They say he's a really nice guy. I'm sure he'll do it.
All right, here goes. Excuse me, Jimmy?
Yes?
I feel a little funny about this, but I was wondering if I could ask you a favor.
Sure, what is it?
Would you come over and fix my fence?
Cobalt tools are so comfortable to use. Once you start working with them, you'll never want to quit. Cobalt, the next generation of tough tools. Available only at Lowe's.
Looking for some good news at the gas pump? Chevy has 7 models that offer an EPA estimated 30 miles per gallon highway or better. From HHR with an EPA estimated 30 mpg highway, to the Avail 5 with an EPA estimated 34 mpg highway, and Cobalt XFE with an EPA estimated 36 miles per gallon highway. Chevy's MVPs of mpg. Based on EPA segmentation. See your local Chevy dealer.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See, that's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Wine Crush. Now that we've all had a chance to taste our wines, get everything ready to go, it is finally time to eat. Joining us, once again, Chef John. Chef, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Today, we are with the Silver Palm Cabernet Sauvignon. John, what do you like to serve with your Cabernet?
Plain and simply, meat.
There
love
you go.
Love red meat. There isn't a red-blooded American that doesn't love meat.
But, Chef, Why don't you explain to people about something about the different cuts of meat and what they can expect to taste in the different styles?
Well, let's talk a little bit about meats. Let's talk about a filet mignon. That's something that everybody's familiar with. And without getting too technical, a filet mignon is the most tender steak out there. And the reason it's the most tender steak out there is it's a single muscle cut. And what that means is there's no intermuscular fat in a filet. Intermuscular fat equals flavor in a steak. So a steak like a filet doesn't have any fat in it, therefore it's the most tender, and that's the one that most people love.
Doesn't that make it flavorless, though, if it has no fat in it?
Technically, yes, it would make it flavorless if it doesn't have a lot of fat into it. If you want to get into something a little bit more flavorful, let's talk about a New York strip. Mm. A New York strip comes from the strip loin, and again, without getting too technical, that has a good deal of intermuscular fat in there, and it's got a great deal of flavor in there. It's a firmer texture than you'll have in your New York strip. For those of you that like the best of both worlds and want to have your cake and eat it too, if you will, you can go to a T-bone.
When you start looking at Cabernets, when you start looking at Merlots, there's part of the chemical structure in these wines that actually do help break down the fat in these steaks. So wouldn't that help make the steak and the wine taste better?
Well, it really would. Pairing big Cabernets with big steaks is one of the finest pleasures in life. There's no doubt about that. And you can get as simple as a hamburger and a bottle of Cabernet, or you can go as high-end as filet mignon and have a nice bottle of Cabernet and all in between.
I've already got my meat. I have it sitting in the refrigerator. I'd like to marinate it. I'd like to do something with it besides just put it on the grill as is. What can I marinate this in besides Worcestershire sauce that would actually complement my wine and give me still a good flavorful piece of dinner?
Well, you can do some nice simple sauces, or you can do some simple marinades. At the very least, salt and pepper. Put a little bit of salt and pepper on each side. That'll give it some flavor. Available in all of your supermarkets, you can find seasoned salt. Lowry's seasoned salt works fine. We do shrimp. We get a jumbo shrimp, and we stuff that with a crab meat filling. And there's a crab, about 80% crab, about 15% breadcrumbs. We put just a touch of egg in there and a touch of red pepper. We'll take that crab meat, stuff that in that shrimp. We'll bake that off. Cook our filet. Take our filet, put it on some simple garlic mashed potatoes. Put that shrimp right on top, and we put a little bit of béarnaise sauce on there. And béarnaise sauce is a hollandaise sauce with tarragon reduction in there. And hollandaise sauce is eggs and butter, a little bit of Tabasco, and a little bit of Worcestershire. Real simple to make.
When's dinner?
6 o'clock every night at my house. I have small kids.
For those of you who would like to try one of his recipes, you can find him on our website. It's winecrush.com. So you can check that out and get yourself a good bottle of Silver Palm Cabernet Sauvignon for the evening and just have a ball.
Thanks for having me. Dinner time.
Okay.
For everyone here at Wine Crush and my partner Michael Ambrose, this is Laura Lawson reminding you that whenever you enjoy wine, make sure you do so responsibly. Join us again next week, and remember, drink the wine you like, not what you read, or as Plato said, in vino veritas. In wine, there is always truth.